LA is how famous you are. DC is how powerful you are. New York is how rich you are. But Austin is how are you?
My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast in Austin, Texas. Yes, we are celebrating women around the world, and Austin is one of my favorite cities in the States. And I get to hang out this afternoon with Ashley. Ashley, you're like a representative of tech and business and entrepreneurship in the state of Texas, I feel like.
Wow, that's very sweet.
It's a lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of responsibility. Lots of hats, lots of tabs open at all times. Yeah.
So go ahead. Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, why I would think that you represent like the state and like innovation.
So my name is Ashley Jennings. I serve as the program manager for the Herb Kelleher Center for Entrepreneurship, Growth and Renewal at UT Austin, Hookham. And I started that role about 5 months ago. But prior to that, I've bootstrapped two companies for 3 years. My first company that's still going is called Sparrow Labs. It's a video production company, and we primarily serve the tech community. Most of our portfolio and clients are tech companies here in Austin, across Texas, some on the West Coast, few on the East Coast as well. And then I'm also one of the co-founders of an accelerator in town called DeVink, which serves women and ethnically diverse tech founders.
Do you sleep?
I'm sleeping more that I'm back on the 40 acres and in this incredible role where I can serve students and alumni by day and then wear a different cape by night. But for a while there, for a good few years, espresso was my friend, and I chugged a lot of red eyes throughout the years.
And you mentioned before we started recording that I think you said on Fridays you go running with your girlfriends.
Yes, we do. We go on a 7 a.m. run every Friday to kick our Friday off right. And usually we're even collaborating a little bit and riffing on like, okay, what are you working on? What projects went on this week? Did you meet anyone cool?
Yeah.
So it's a good group, good circle to have.
Awesome. So we share a love for production. We'll get into the video production. We'll get into your university work, and we'll get into your accelerator work. Where do you want to begin?
Probably with the video production,
okay,
since that's my kind of foundational,
sure,
groundwork of everything. I started as a field producer in New York at ABC News. I was on Diane Sawyer's team, which was incredible at the time when she was on the desk. I did that for a few years, and I went and helped launch Al Jazeera America when we had the American network up and running. And after so many years in New York, I just realized it was time to get back to Texas. I knew I would always end up back in Austin.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how long it would take me to come back home. And I left New York with the dream of owning my own video production company.
Right.
Because I had the skill set at that point. I had learned a lot being in a network newsroom. And I wanted to pivot from telling, bad stories of horrific tragedy to telling great brand stories for our clients. And so,
right,
that's what I came back to Austin to do. And I launched a video production company out of Capital Factory. So I was inside of Capital Factory.
Tell us what Capital Factory is.
Absolutely. Capital Factory is a co-working space, accelerator, and fund in town for tech startups. And it was the first of its kind here in Austin. And the team there really creates the center of gravity for all things happening in the city when it comes to tech and innovation. And it's a great resource for founders, and it's been one of my family one of my startup family communities since the beginning. I really learned how to be an entrepreneur at Capital Factory because I never thought I'd be doing this. I'm definitely an accidental entrepreneur.
You may be accidental, but you have your feet, hands, toes, ears, and everything dipped into all of it. So let's talk about your university. Let's jump over to your university work. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So throughout the years, as I've been growing my own companies and serving the tech and startup community, I was kind of slowly being called back home to the 40 acres. And this past year in January, I pivoted away from the accelerator that I had co-founded. And I put my focus on pouring into the next generation of entrepreneurs and realizing that there's so much innovation going on campus. You kind of get siloed in the downtown community, but there are incredible innovation centers at every single college on campus. And the resources, not just for students and alum, but for the community, are incredible. And so I started with Herb Kelleher Center for Entrepreneurship. And basically what we do is we create programming, workshops, pitch competitions, any and all resources that a startup on campus might need to be successful. And then we're in the process of figuring out how to serve our alum more through a fund that we're raising for the university. I'm excited because I truly believe that UT Austin is the top institute in the world for innovation and entrepreneurship. We just got to get that story out a little bit more.
And you said that you've had three startups in your past?
Two.
And tell us a little bit about that before we jump into your accelerator.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the accelerator is one of my startups.
Oh, okay. That's one of the two. Okay.
So one of the two, Sparrow Labs is one, my production company, and kind of how that all evolved. So I was working out of Capital Factory. I was mentoring on storytelling and messaging and the importance of how to do quality video on a shoestring budget, how to do it well. And I was helping a lot of startups. And as we were building out our production company, I was looking around for women mentors and advisors and noticed such a lack thereof in the tech space and thought, where are my ladies at? So I started doing a lot of research around where all the VC funding was going or lack thereof. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Only 3% go to women founders. And then out of that, only 1% women of color. And so the statistics are there. I became very passionate about figuring out how to help women business owners and teamed up with two co-founders. And we launched DeVink. And we had three different cohorts go through before I pivoted away this year. And it's just been incredible to watch the growth and the community support and just Austin as a whole becoming the epicenter for diversity in tech and becoming kind of this area where we're just churning out more diversity and tech evangelists, which is great. Like it's everyone, rising tides are coming together. Every co-working space in town is catching on to the importance and the need to vocalize, hey, we need to be actively recruiting talent. And so watching our companies come through, we're modeled after tech stars. So it's a real lean, mean curriculum. And just watching the companies come through, the 30 that I was there for was incredible. And it was just such an incredible journey. While I was doing that is when I pivoted into this new university role this year.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. And where the beginning is going to go is eventually I'm going to ask you is how do you organize your day? But at the beginning, when did you first fall in love with technology?
I think it started in the network newsroom. I mean, from a storyteller perspective, tech is vital in how we kind of capture stories, especially breaking news stories on the ground. And just watching the evolution of what we're doing today in the news world is incredible. I mean, we're utilizing AR and VR and 360 video, and we're putting audiences in the depth of what's happening in real time. And some of those devices are as tiny as, you know, you could fit in your hand. And so watching the evolution of that from the big bulky cameras with tape that we were utilizing in 2011 has been kind of my initial passion around tech and on the equipment side of things. And then when I started serving tech companies out of Capital Factory and helping them export their stories and helping these incredible entrepreneurs out of Austin figure out how to get their story out to the West Coast and the East Coast, because that's the thing is like Austin has the opportunity and we continue to own the middle of the country.
Right.
I think we have the opportunity. We are the next Silicon Valley. And I think working out of a co-working space like Capital Factory really provokes that like passion for tech within you. And we are a tech town, hands down, for sure.
Especially. Oh, you're totally a tech town.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're an awesome tech town because, I don't know, I feel like Austin, wherever you go, you feel like you're in your best friend's living room at all times.
Absolutely. You do. I have a lot of mentors that I love and have served me so greatly over the years and great friendships. But one of my mentors says it best whenever he's talking about Austin, because he's worked on each coast recovering network news. And he says, you know, LA is how famous you are. DC is how powerful you are. New York is how rich you are. But Austin is how are you? And that's really true.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I love that.
To our culture, it is how are you? We're so collaborative. We are all hands on deck at all times helping one another. I mean, I've never had a bad incident with entrepreneurs trying to help, especially the women in tech.
Yeah.
And the women leaders in town are such a group and incredible community that back each other up and lift each other up.
I've never heard that, and I love it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Josh Rubin. I'll give the credit to Josh Rubin.
I love it. And then you execute so much day to day. How do you organize yourself?
Absolutely. Well, like I said, my day cape is serving students and our alumni at the University of Texas at Austin. So by day, I'm making sure that all of our fall programming is set. We're flying in some incredible speakers. Some of our serial entrepreneurs and our VCs on the West Coast are coming in for big speaker series. We're planning for Austin Startup Week right now. We're leaders for the university and student entrepreneur track. We're also launching our first entrepreneurship minor. So we have our first 115 students coming in the fall.
Wow.
Who can get a minor in entrepreneurism now. And it's awesome. Just kind of taking that cohort and seeing how we can help them progress, and also tracking the data around the moment they enter the 40 acres as a freshman to their second, third company down the road. And so by day I wear that cape. And then by night I put on my Sparrow Labs hat. Yeah.
And what drives you? Like, why do you so much?
Well, honestly, I think with entrepreneurism and being an entrepreneur, there are ebb and flows that you have to figure out, you know, especially with bootstrapping companies. For me, at the beginning of this year, I really needed to figure out recalibrating a little bit financially, because I had just ran my nonprofit for 2 years.
Yeah.
And we ran that with very little resources. And my other two co-founders and I poured our sweat, blood, and tears into it. But we had just started gathering the success metrics to start really selling our story and get the funding and the sponsorship we needed to be successful. So for me, also, it's seasons. So this season, you know, I've been called to back to campus. And I also have the dream of going the venture route is my ultimate goal.
Right.
I realize as many resources and mentorships and network you can pour into women business owners, it's the capital. We've got to have women investing in women more. And so my dream is that. So hence being back on the 40 acres, I'm auditing some finance classes. I'm learning the hard skills that I haven't, you know, had yet in my career, and utilizing being back on campus in the education and the academia and some of the top researchers in the country around entrepreneurism are at UT. So kind of reading what they're doing and learning right now.
And what do you think are the advantages of studying to be an entrepreneur versus just going out and doing it, or a combination of the two? Like, a lot of people would be apprehensive, like, why go to school and pay to learn when I could just dive in and try?
Absolutely. I mean, and coming from industry and now being in academia, that's the exact question that I ask myself, meeting a lot of my directors and, you know, a lot of the leaders on campus who study entrepreneurism but haven't necessarily launched their own product or service or something. There's such value in the research, and there's such value in the education. As I said, as an accidental entrepreneur, I have great soft skills. I have also learned fundraising and business development. But now, to take my career to the next level, having those hard skills that a business school offers, I think is going to help me tenfold down the road. But it's, you know, everyone has their own journey.
What tips can you give us about fundraising?
Oh, absolutely. Fundraising as a woman, as you know, is a little harder. My success rate walking into a room with one of my male counterparts was always a little more successful ending the presentation than if it was just me in the room. But tips around fundraising, I mean, it's all about building relationships starting out. It's building organic, real relationships. And so I never would have an initial coffee meeting with an investor or a potential sponsor that started off with an ask. The ask should come in the second or third, maybe even fourth meeting, but it should never be in that first meeting. You tell your story first and you create a relationship with them, and you help them understand your story and care about your story is the biggest thing for fundraising. And then, I mean, I was fundraising for a nonprofit. And so, you know, we thought it would be really easy. We went the nonprofit route because we thought, okay, let's go to Google, let's go to IBM, Intel, Dell, gather those checks. You know, sure, everyone's doing their own sort of D&I, diversity inclusion efforts internally in these corporations and on these campuses. But because we didn't have metrics off the top and we were just selling a story, it was hard to get large checks. It was me just our biz dev team just going out and getting those small checks to just survive at first, that first year.
And what is an obstacle? We are talking a little bit about what is challenging. What was an obstacle that you've successfully overcome and how did you overcome it?
An obstacle that I had to overcome in the past few years of being an entrepreneur, I think for me, has been figuring out when to pivot and the right time to pivot and when to let something go.
That's so hard.
And it's really hard. It really, especially when you've given, like I said, sweat, blood, and tears into making it work and the dream, and you can visualize what the 3 to 5 years down the road looks like if you could just get that little bit of funding. And so I think letting go of that dream and letting go of, you know, something that you've been working on for so long is, it's hard, but it's also ebb and flows of being an entrepreneur. And it's a smart move because you're being, when a door slams, usually 3, 4, 5 others open at that time. And so it's important to strategically figure out what doors you're going to walk through and give your energy to versus I used to walk through all doors and take all opportunities. And now I'm at the point in my career where I realize I don't have to take every coffee meeting. I don't have to say yes to every coffee meeting. I need to preserve my energy and my health and my time, you know, as much as possible. And so I think that was something that took me the past 3 to 4 years to learn was, you know, preserving health and time and saying no, because saying no can be hard too.
Totally. Totally. Saying no is really hard. It's funny. We had an interview earlier today and her thing is saying yes. Mm. My thing is saying no. It's like there's no right or wrong. There's pros and cons to both.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people ask me for a lot of things. In order to mind my health, I need to say no now a lot. So it's not about saying yes to the opportunity. However, in my personal life, it is because I haven't allowed enough space for my personal life. So if somebody said, let's go race car driving, it's like, even if I feel busy, just say yes. Just go.
Yeah.
Let's go on a boat. Yes.
Yep.
But in my professional life, I'm like, no. Need a little bit more me time, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And she was saying the reason that she excelled so far ahead in her professional life is she said yes to a lot of things that she was worried about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I started out saying yes because I was learning. Like when I first got back on the ground here in Austin 4 years ago, I had no clue. Oh, I wanted to, you know, create a video production company, but how do I do that? Where do I go to learn? Who are the mentors? I mean, I was taking so many coffee meetings, trying to just to gather and learn, going to so many meetups and networking events to really get a grasp of the community and the incredible resources Austin has for founders and startups. And so I was doing that. But when you do that and you're out at networking events 4 nights a week and you're working 10-hour days before that, it's just a point hits where you hit a wall and you've got to reel it back a little bit.
Now, why do all three? Why do the – and I know the accelerator is kind of like you're really passionate about it, but it's on the list of priorities. It's UT and then the video work. They're kind of the same but different hours of the day. And then the accelerator. But like why all three?
Well, the accelerator I'm not involved with anymore. I was just
– have moved on. So I have just part of your
fully
life.
Fully moved on. Yeah, fully moved
you
on.
You just believe in it being successful.
I do. I do support, of course, you know, our portfolio companies that came through for those 2 years that I was helping. But I am one of the initial co-founders. So I do still support and definitely will meet with founders when needed and connect make connections for them. And but now it's and that's another thing is too, is like so many tabs open at all times, right? As entrepreneurs, we probably have a million different tabs open in our minds, projects, things we want to work on.
And on our desktop.
And on our desktop. So how
it's
do you,
everywhere.
How do you turn, how do you close some of those tabs to focus? Because that's really the only way to grow and scale on your career is to focus on very few. And so I've kind of hit that point where I realize I was running around. I was doing a little too much. So how do I recalibrate and make sure that I'm pouring energy into what, like my 5-year goals, which means, you know, closing some of those tabs and just focusing.
Yeah. Where can people connect with you?
People can connect
out online.
Yeah, I do. I'm very active on Twitter. And that just comes from my news world days, but I'm very active on Twitter. People can connect with me there. I also, you know, I always give out my email if people want to
sit down
and have coffee. Ashley, Ashley at Sparrow, Spero labs.com.
You've been exposed to a lot of different types of entrepreneurship, from being involved with Accelerator to the university to your own stuff. What would you say is a common mistake people make when starting?
A common mistake people make when starting is market validation and talking to their customer and really figuring out if what they want to do is even a need or a problem to solve. I love that we're a tech city. It's great. We're developing so many incredible products and services, but I want to see more like real world problems being solved in Austin. It's great to have a dating app rolled out and, you know, more on the market there. But if we could, on the social innovation side of things, which we have a thriving ecosystem that's just launched on the east side around social innovation. Man, think about the world problems we could solve in other ways, not just focusing on, you know, tech all the time. And I think we have a great opportunity to solve some incredible problems. But main mistake that I see a lot of founders make is market validation, talking to customers, and really planning out that go-to-market strategy. Marketing is key. And I think I always emphasize building community around whatever you're about to launch before you even do.
Right.
So that you already have your buy-in, your customers there ready.
It's funny. We're sitting here in Impact Hub, which is this incredible co-working space here in Austin. And as far as I'm aware, they actually do social impact events and initiatives. So you guys go, I think it's impacthub.com or something like that. But I'm pretty sure they're doing one coming up on like how the city's growing and to grow with scale and ease and to incorporate community in that growth. I don't remember, to be honest. I just remember social innovation and Impact Hub, there was a combination there that they were a part. Do you know about
it? They do a ton of great stuff. Okay. I absolutely adore Ashley Phillips and her team here and just the whole leadership with Impact Hub Austin. And they run a specific accelerator around sustainability and housing affordability. And so I think that graduation is coming up for this recent cohort class that just went through the accelerator. And it's cool. They're working on some cool stuff, like how to build out housing with shipping containers. That might be, you know, implemented on the east side for everyone moving here and whatnot. I mean, I would say solving some real problems
awesome.
To be solved.
And what is your favorite book?
Oh gosh, that's a hard one. I go through seasons with books where like right now I'm in a, you know, recalibrating financially season. So I'm reading a lot of books around, like I just read The Science of Getting Rich. And following up on that, I read Jen Sincero's You Are a Badass at Making Money, which is so great. Love that
one.
Was
it a good book?
Oh, it was great. Yeah. And she mimics it off of The Art of Science.
What is the takeaway?
The takeaway is just all about surrounding yourself with the same frequency of people that are wanting the same thing out of life that you are at the moment. So Jen has a great story, and I read her first book, You Are a Badass. But she basically, I mean, she was a profound author in New York, you know, writing for the New York Times, and was a freelancer, but she could never figure out how to actually make money, which a lot of us creatives have a problem figuring that out. But she started manifesting and visualizing. She got a life coach, and she started hanging out with more of her high-frequency friends who were, you know, doing careers and jobs that she wanted to mimic one day. And now she runs her own consultancy and coaching firm, and it's pretty cool. And just hearing her own personal stories of being in the depths of like, oh my gosh, just one more check needs to come through to make rent, to now she runs like, you know, a six figure. She's making, I mean, revenue wise monthly, she's doing really well.
So that's, I have to check that out.
That's a good
How
one.
To be a badass.
You are a badass.
Yeah.
And then the one I just read is you are a badass at making money.
You are a badass at making money.
Yeah. But I would say that my favorite book in recent reading has probably been all Brené Brown. I'm reading Brené's most recent.
Loves her. I haven't read any yet.
Stuff. Yeah.
But I hear her name all the time.
Daren Greatly is really good. But Sheryl Sandberg's Plan B was my favorite, I think, this past year. Our option, Sheryl Sandberg's Option B, she spoke at the women's conference this
right.
year, and it was incredible to hear her story. And then we all went home with a signed copy. And so I got on Audible and listened to it right away. And that was absolutely inspiring, and how to pivot when you're going through personal life crises and you're just walking through some really hard times. And as an entrepreneur and, you know, a leader, how to then take that and implement things within your own company culture to do better for people. So her big thing was creating leave around death, longer leave around when you lost a loved one.
What is your favorite productivity tool or software or app?
Trello. I love Trello.
Well, okay, why Trello, Basecamp, Asana, why Trello?
Trello I find easier to navigate than the others, but I've been on Trello for a while now, and I love that I can make my boards specifically around whether it's an event that I'm hosting or I'm prepping for a meeting or I'm talking to my whole marketing team of what collateral we need done by when. I put deadlines on there. I love Trello. What else do we... Yeah, Trello is probably my main one. I'm not a big Slack person. I know everyone uses Slack in the startup world.
So, okay, wait, no. So supposedly, but then we have a private Slack community in Los Angeles, the We Are LA Tech Slack. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, we need Slack. But then they don't actually want the Slack.
Yeah.
They just want the Slack to exist, but not actually use the Slack.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, I don't want to get notified in the middle of my meeting. I'm like, well, turn off your notification. You know, like,
yeah.
But I think it's very confusing. I think the PR campaign for Slack is very strong.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if the use of Slack
I know.
Is as strong.
True. But you're right. I think I have so many channels up right now that
right?
I'm not on.
So many channels.
Yeah.
And I just pop in when, like, something comes to mind. Like, I'm on a flight, like, hacker
mm-hmm.
channel. So, like, let's say I'm trying to book a flight somewhere, I'll go there. But other than that, I don't know if I'm getting DM'd. I don't know
yep.
if I'm at mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Trello is probably my favorite yeah. one for sure. Yeah.
Rad. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast. Is there anything you wanted to say that we didn't get to?
No, I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me and for being here and helping tell such important stories.
Oh, my God. It's exciting. Your city.
Oh, I know. It is
the
energy. I was just at the Army's celebration because they just announced that the new Futures Command Center is going to be here. And we're doing that with – they're going to be at UT. They'll be housed at our UT Systems building. And so just being around that sort of innovation and the minds coming in, I mean, it's – we just keep on – growing. It's awesome. It's exciting.
So rad. Thank you so much for hanging out with Women in Tech. If you want to connect with more incredible women in tech around the world, remember to go to the Women in Tech Facebook group at womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. Say hello on social, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook at Women in Tech Show. I will talk to you guys, see you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
This is Ashley Jennings. I'm the program manager at Herb Kelleher Center for Entrepreneurship, Growth, and Renewal at the University of Texas at Austin. We are the epicenter for all things innovation happening at UT, and you are listening to Women in Tech.
Impact Hub here in Austin, Texas has been our home. We want to give a huge thanks to making it possible for us to comfortably meet and interview several inspiring women in tech. They have the most collaborative workspace, incredible events, beautiful design, a hammock in their backyard. What? It's an incredible space. You have to check it out if you're in Austin. Thank you so much for being a part of the Women in Tech journey. Be sure to go to impacthubaustin.com to get your free day of co-working. I want to give a huge thanks to the team at SpyCloud. SpyCloud protects your employee and customer information from breaches and account takeovers. Try SpyCloud's early warning breach detection platform. SpyCloud made it possible for us to meet with several women in tech here in Austin, Texas, and I am so thankful that they have been part of the Women in Tech podcast journey. Get protected today by going to spycloud.com. That's SPYCLOUD.com.